Well, hello. On today's episode, we survive the snowpocalypse. Donald Sutherland is Gandalf the White. And Steven Seagal's still making movies?
What?
I'm Justin Eisenstadt.
I'm Colin Kakamas.
And you just got to the good part. Strap in and sit tight, because we are boldly going nowhere.
Hello, I'm Justin Eisenstadt.
And I'm Colin Kakamas.
And we are, of course, boldly going nowhere.
Bim bam bam, ribby dam dam.
Today is Saturday, February 13th, 2010, and I'm really excited about this show today because, once again, Colin is back in the co-pilot chair.
Yeah.
Happy to be here?
Yeah, I am.
We're coming to you, as always, from my private studio, and it is still a winter wonderland out there, although I don't think wonderland is the term.
Wasteland.
Yeah. We're just kind of coming off the tail end, it seems, of snowpocalypse, or at this point, son of snowpocalypse, or we might even be up to son of snowpocalypse.
Yeah.
And it's not fun, I'll tell you that. But if you live anywhere on the East Coast, then you already know this. I'm sure you've all got your own crazy stories of fun and adventure from, you know, how you in particular cope with what the season throws at you. And it has thrown a lot.
Indeed it has. I mean, in Frederick, where me and Justin are from, we had at least 30 inches.
Yeah, I'd say we got about the same in Baltimore.
Yeah.
And I've now had an entire week plus a day of no classes. So I've literally been basically trapped inside. Well, not trapped. I mean, I've gone outside. I've been able to get to, you know, play in the snow. Although, I should say, after Thursday when the snow, or Friday when the snow was first coming down, we went out. We had just the most epic of epic snowball fights, which took us from all the way from one apartment all the way down to where the dorms are.
Yeah.
And we were... It was a great time.
Actually, I've got a snowball fight that'll top that.
I bet you do.
The city of Frederick actually sponsored a snowball fight.
Oh man, you were telling me about that. So yeah. Tell me about it. How'd the Frederick snowball fight go?
I don't know. I couldn't dig out.
Really?
Yeah.
You couldn't get out to get to the snowball fight?
No. Well, see, the problem was...
That's true. You don't technically live in the city limits proper.
I don't live within the city limits. But see, here's the thing. Surprisingly enough, it's outside of the city limits. The roads were perfectly well plowed. It was within the city limits that the roads were complete crap.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, literally, I can tell you that, like, the main arteries of the downtown traffic were, like, literally adrift in 2-foot snow, drifts.
Oh, man.
It was not good. And I was like, you know what, you think, since most of the business is in downtown, you think the city would make that their top priority. But it's an interesting fact I found out, that the plows that plow outside of the city are employed by this county, right?
Right.
So the county pays those guys by the mile. So the more they plow, and the more often that they plow, the more they get paid.
Okay, that makes
Whereas
sense.
Whereas the guys in the city, they get paid by the hour. So the longer it takes for them to do it, the more they get paid.
Well, surely by now they have realized that's a terrible system.
Yeah, I would hope so, but some of the roads in Frederick are still pretty shitty.
Well, I'm kind of glad I wasn't back there then. I can only imagine how terrible my neighborhood is. I mean, if what you claim is true, then maybe my neighborhood had some, you know, chance of getting plowed. But from what I hear from my brothers, it has not. Although, at this point, I don't know. What I do know is that even around here on 695, which is a major, you know, it's the beltway, although it's a pretty shitty beltway. As I've always kind of liked to make this analogy, if you're going to compare 695 as a beltway to an actual belt, as opposed to say $4.95. So $4.95 is great. $4.95 is like four lanes wide, and I've never really had problems. I don't take $4.95 that often, but the couple times I have driven on $4.95, it's been relatively speaking, quite nice. $6.95 is just awful all the time, it seems like. Even on $6.95, rush hour is like 4 hours long at least. So I like to compare $4.95. If $4.95 is a belt, then it's a studded, it's a white belt studded with rhinestones. It's a pretty nice belt, yeah. $6.95, on the other hand, if you were gonna wear it as a belt, it'd be like a knotted rope.
Or maybe a bungee cord tied around itself.
Yeah, like a bungee cord kind of wrapped around itself a couple times over.
Like a hillbilly belt.
Yeah, a hillbilly belt, exactly. It's less than ideal, and
no good.
Similarly, Frederick City, those roads are terrible to navigate, even in perfect weather.
This is true.
So I can't imagine how much of a clusterfuck.
Oh, it's gotten worse, did I tell you?
Worse?
Yeah. They built an overpass, and the off-ramp for 70 that came off over Harry Grove Stadium?
Yeah.
That's completely gone.
Really?
Yep. Now you have to take the bridge, the new bridge that they opened up, you have to take that bridge in order to get on 70 West.
That's just bizarre.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's literally one lane of traffic going into 70 West and one lane of traffic coming off of the highway. It's a bad system, and it's going to bite them in the ass eventually.
Yeah, I'm going to call shenanigans on Frederick City yeah. highway planning.
Mm-hmm.
I know around here, at least, it's like the exit ramps are just, they've barely been cleared, and like you've got about, it seems like, 6 feet of space to actually get onto the exit ramp. Now, the condition of the roads is only compounded by the fact that apparently when there's snow out, people just forget how to drive.
This is true.
I mean, there's just, cars are going every which way, people forget how to signal, they don't remember the concept of right-of-way. It's just, you know what it's like? It's like Snowpocalypse has, it's like the actual apocalypse. It's like we are now living in a post-apocalyptic society where all order has just broken down and everybody's making their own rules. Take for example the grocery store, which just it's like entering the Thunderdome. It's just straight out of Mad Max, that parking lot over by the Giant. You cannot make heads or tails of the situation, especially since there's like parts of the parking lot have not been plowed through, so parts of it turns into this labyrinth of old ladies and shopping carts and just and walls of snow where you end up getting into dead ends, and then you get trapped by people sharking for spaces. It's just,
and then Tina Turner comes out of nowhere and tries to subjugate you.
Yeah, Master Blaster hops out of the little cart return and challenges you to fight to the death.
Mm.
I went to a Giant right before the initial storm started, back 2 weeks ago. We went to the Giant, but first we went to this one over by Route 40, right across from the H Mart parking lot. I don't know if you're familiar with the H Mart, are you?
No, I'm not familiar with the H Mart.
The H Mart is a grocery, it's an Asian grocery store, or Asian Walmart, I don't know, because I'm too afraid to go in there. All I know is I can only judge people based on what I see and what I experience, and based on all the people who were in that parking lot. It's not speaking well for the Asian community in terms of their ability to, operate motor vehicles. At least not old ladies, okay? I'm sure there are plenty of great Asian drivers out there. In fact, I know there are because of the whole drifting scene. I know that's quite popular.
What'd you get that from, Fast and Furious?
Yeah, man.
Really?
Fast and the Furious Tokyo Drift. You know they made like four of those movies?
Yeah, I know that. I wish I didn't.
So the Giant over there, it was just, you really get an appreciation for just how slow old women are.
Old Asian women or old still women?
In this case, we're just talking about old women of all colors and creeds.
Okay, cool.
You really get an appreciation for just how slow they are when you're like 20 minutes late to work. See, we left at 2 o'clock. I had to work at 4, and we're like, 2 hours should be plenty of time to get to the grocery store 10 minutes away, do all our shopping, and get back in time for me to go to work. And there's just, the lines are all the way out around the corner down at the frozen food section. There's just people, you know, going every which way. It was a mess. And I had to call into work and be like, yeah, I'm going to be late because I'm stuck behind Methuselah. And, you know, she just had to get more cat litter.
So, well, because ladies like that, I mean, they're cats of their lives.
That's true. Old cat, crazy cat ladies, you know. Was that supposed to be the
cat lady from the Simpsons? Yeah.
Good work. You've got a bright and promising career ahead of you. And I'd say we have a pretty bright and promising show ahead of us.
Oh, so. Yeah.
Why don't we get started with our fun fact?
Fun fact!
All right, today's fun fact is not animal-related.
Thank God.
I guess technically, it is, because humans are animals, but it is not about one of our nature's friends. It's about cancer.
Oh.
Did you know that the first cause of cancer was identified by British surgeon Percival Pott?
I did not know that.
Well, he discovered it in 1775, that cancer of the scrotum was a common disease among chimney sweeps.
Cancer of the scrotum?
Apparently a common ailment of chimney sweeps. It's funny, because they all looked so cheerful in Mary Poppins.
Yeah, I didn't think you'd be, you know, jumping and dancing around if you found out you were a eunuch.
That's true. There's nothing to celebrate.
No.
About.
Dick Van Dyke looked so cheerful in that movie.
Dick Van Dyke, he was the best of chimney sweeps. Hate to think of him getting stricken down by scrotal cancer. But in that line of work, you know, in addition to getting... You'd think lung cancer would have been...
More prevalent, yeah. But no, I guess scrotal cancer.
Yes, probably, use the technical term.
Scrotal cancer. Scrotal cancer was probably the worst cause. That sucks.
Well, that sucks. Maybe that's why he was, you know... Well, I guess...
Maybe that's why he was celibate. That's why he couldn't be with Mary Poppins.
That's true. That's why he and Mary Poppins could not bang one out.
Yeah, because he had scrotal cancer. His dick rot off.
That's really sad, and kind of funny, because, you know, Dick Van Dyke sounds like such a...
Porn star name.
I was just going to say it sounds like a very vigorous, a very potent name.
Yeah.
Dick Van Dyke. And that's today's fun fact.
Fun fact!
All right, well, that was edutaining.
Edutaining!
And let's move on now to our next segment, which is, of course, I was about to say it.
Oh.
Ridiculous news items of the day.
Shit's getting way too complicated for me.
All right, so we've got a few items for you, items of interest.
All hilarious.
Yes, items of hilarity, items guaranteed to amuse you. Let's start with this first one. Colin, you want to kick things off? And
sure. In Newcastle, Delaware, police responded to a report of a suspicious man carrying a gun. But instead of finding a man with a gun, they found two legs sticking out of a homemade igloo. Apparently, the legs belonged to a Delaware teen who was arrested Wednesday after he was found carrying a survival knife, a hammer, 7.5 grams of marijuana, and 2 bongs. Apparently, the teen was released to his parents, and he was charged with carrying a concealed deadly weapon, carrying a concealed deadly instrument, and possession of drug paraphernalia and possession of marijuana.
Well... Kid, you win some, you lose some. But I just want to draw attention here to probably the best part about this article, which surprisingly enough is not the teen stoner in the igloo.
What is it?
It's actually the county police spokesman.
Oh, who, yeah.
Has probably the best name ever. We're talking about Senior Corporal Trinidad Navarro.
You think there's any relation to Dave Navarro?
I damn well hope so. Or maybe he just, you know...
Maybe he's got the sweet Navarro stash.
Maybe he's got the Navarro facial hair set up.
Yep.
But, Senior Corporal Trinidad Navarro, this one's for you. Alright. I'll read the next one.
Okay.
And you know what? I think I'm going to do it in a British accent. Do it like the BBC.
Okay.
State officials in Maine say witnesses who reported seeing a drowning snowmobiler on a lake were probably looking at an otter enjoying a snack. On Thursday, three people reported seeing a snowmobiler wearing all black and a black helmet struggling in Moosehead Lake. Officials used an airboat and flew overhead on both Thursday and Friday, but found no evidence that a person had gone through the ice. Oh, that's enough of that. But it was fun. And, so apparently, people in Maine are not that observant, or not that bright. But what's better, there are otters in Maine. And otters, as we all know, are adorable.
Yeah. So, this is the same source of news where we thought that, you know, there are no poisonous snakes in Maine.
That's true. Maine has a weird thing going on with animals. I don't know why, but,
damn it, I love it.
Damn it, I love them. And once again, Stephen King's from Maine, so.
Yeah, well.
That sounds like, I don't know, something he would write, you know, if he was getting lazy, like, there's a dead man out on the ice, and then they go through all the twists and turns to find out that it was just an otter.
It's just an otter.
Enjoying a clam.
Out of nowhere, the killer cat from Pet Sematary pops up.
Yeah, that'll work. Alright, and now for the third and final news item, which is particularly timely as tomorrow is the day of St. Valentine's, and this is a somewhat Valentine's Day related article. So, Colin, take it away.
Well, it starts off on a good note. Need to get over your ex? He'll take away the old photos, letters, and socks of your lover left behind. Call the Death Bear.
The Death Bear.
It's an interesting story. Apparently a street performer by the name of
Nate Hill,
is a 7-foot-tall, self-appointed public servant for the bereft and the brokenhearted in the Brooklyn area.
Yes.
Apparently, he acts as a sort of superhero who dresses up like a bear.
A death bear.
And basically comes around to people who've been dumped or people who've lost a loved one. And basically he comes and he takes away all the crap that would remind you of that person.
So, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, but with a bear.
With a bear. So, frankly, more entertaining.
Yes. Eternal Sunshine Bear. Eternal Sun Bear of the Spotless Mind. I think that's a type of bear, the Sun Bear.
Eternal Bear of the Spotless Mind.
So, let me just make sure Sun Bear is in fact a type of bear.
Sun Bear.
Yep, I have confirmation from the internet that sun bears
apparently found in the tropical rainforest of Southeast Asia
are now, a type of bear. So eternal sun bear of the spotless mind.
Hey, here's one. Is it death bear an actual bear?
Is a death bear? Let's see. Is death bear?
Is he encroaching on wildlife?
No, but I do have an image of a bear holding a chainsaw.
That's pretty fucking awesome.
So let's go back to this. This death bear comes around and he takes away all the crap that reminds you of your ex, as you said.
Away clothes, old photos, mementos, letters. He's there to assist you in your time of tragedy, heartbreak, and loss. Apparently he's visited dozens of homes, encountering all sorts of people eager for the catharsis and fresh starts. Most who saw him have endured a crushing breakup or other romantic loss.
I can understand, I can understand what motivates such people to seek any respite from their aching memories that they can.
But a bear?
A bear. I don't know. The costume, a black jumpsuit, black boots, and a shiny, hard black bear head, is much more reminiscent of Darth Vader than, say, Winnie the Pooh, but people who have received visits from Death Bear say he's a comforting present. Presence. Not a scary one. Not a scary one.
Well, maybe until you piss him off and then he just force chokes you.
That's true. Death Bear, that does look, you know, he does look a bit like Dark Helmet, but with bear ears on the top of it.
Death Bear ain't nothing to fuck around with.
Mm-mm. No, I think,
I think we can honestly say that Death Bear is nothing to fuck with.
I think if you get to the point where Death Bear is visiting your home, then it's time to seriously re-examine your life. Because if that relationship was causing you so much pain that you need a 7-foot-tall anthropomorphic bear to cut it out of your life, maybe it's time to seek more, I don't know, sane methods of therapy.
Yeah, help would be wise at that point. Wait for the men in white coats and the needles, and everything will be fine.
Because here's the thing, you got Death Bear to get rid of your old relationship, but how do you get rid of Death Bear?
That is a good question. What's going to prevent Death Bear from just shacking up with you and starting a relationship himself?
Yeah, and if you, let's say you get in a relationship with Death Bear and then you have a messy breakup, what are you going to do? You can't get Death Bear to come take away all the memories of your own relationship with him.
Yeah, I know, because then you'll be surrounded by the memories of Death Bear.
And here's an additional line of inquiry. What happens when, after Death Bear has come along and raided your bedroom and taken away all your photo albums, you know, that T-shirt, you know, that that bracelet that, you know, your old flame got you?
WWJD.
Right. What happens, and, you know, we're going with the whole Eternal Sun Bear of the Spotless Mind scenario.
Uh-huh.
Now, for those of you, you know...
What if he pulls the Elijah Wood gambit?
I don't know.
Elijah Wood, he blanked that chick's memory and then tried to get with her?
That wasn't what I was going for. Oh, were you saying, what if Death Bear tries to get with your old... Alright, I wasn't even going for that one, but that's a great question. What if Death Bear just uses all... What if Death Bear is just secretly going around taking people's stuff and just using it to get with their exes?
Exactly.
Death Bear, you sneaky son of a bitch.
I would never have thought of that. Death Bear, you you sly bastard.
You sly boots. You sly... You fox, you. That's not...
You weren't even thinking of that.
No, that's not what I was going to ask.
What were you going to ask?
Okay, what I was going to ask was, in Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, Jim Carrey decides to get the same treatment, but then right at the last minute realizes that he still has feelings for his ex-girlfriend and decides to go and try and reverse the process and go and get them back, go and reclaim his memories. What if you have the same thing? What if Death Bear comes, takes your stuff, and it says he locks it away in his cave, his death cave? What if, you know, the next day you're like, I've made a terrible mistake, Arrested Development style, and you're like, I need to get those photo albums, I need to get that T-shirt, I need to get that bracelet back. I want that person back in my life.
Exactly. What would Jesus do? I need that bracelet to know.
Yeah. Death Bear's got your shit, and he's locked away in his death cave. What are you going to do? You think Death Bear's just going to part with that?
I don't think so. He wants to use it to mack your girlfriend.
That's
so,
true. Yeah. It's true. Especially if he's using it to mack your ex-girlfriend. Death Bear is definitely running a non-refundable operation here.
Death Bear is nothing to fuck with.
That's true, and he's nothing to fuck with. I don't think you've got much of a chance of besting Death Bear in one-on-one combat.
No, I don't think so. He's a bear.
And he's 7 foot tall.
And he is reminiscent of death.
Yeah, that's true. He's got death in the name. You've only got one avenue that you can go down once you start, start the dance, start the tango with Death Bear. But you know what? I think I've got a great idea for a film here, Eternal Sun Bear of the Spotless Mind.
And then we tangle
and
with
at
Death
the
Bear.
Very end, at
we
the
tangle
very,
with Death Bear.
Yeah, at the very end we have an elaborate staged wire-fu fight scene where our protagonist takes on Death Bear in single combat in order to reclaim the memories of his previous relationship.
I'd pay to see that. I think I would. Would you pay to see that?
I would pay buku bucks to see that.
I would pay buku bucks as well.
All right. Well, let's leave you with that one there and take a little bit of a break here. All
right.
And play some music for you.
Change your heart, look around you, change your heart, it will astound you. and I need your loving like the sunshine. Change your heart, look around you, change your heart, it will astound you, I need your love. Thank you.
that was Beck with Everybody's Gotta Learn Sometime from the movie Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. And from this rather melodious overtone, you can tell that it's the time of year, or the time of every 2 years, isn't it?
Every 4 years, actually.
Is it every 4 years for the Olympics? Or every
point
four
is, we're talking about the Olympics.
Oh, God.
Winter Olympics, 2010, Vancouver, British Columbia, located in Canada.
Yeah, I think I got that.
So, yeah, I watched the opening ceremony of the Olympics last night.
Yeah?
To be honest, I wasn't really all that into watching it to begin with. Lena kind of convinced me that it would be a good thing to do as a couple, I guess. She had the
remote, didn't she?
She had the remote.
Yeah.
And she was really excited about the Olympics. I was kind of indifferent, yeah, apathetic towards it. The Olympics, I have really no interest in the Olympics. It's just a bunch of, you know, sports that I either don't know about or don't care about.
It's really just
every four years.
It's like a 4 year dick waving contest over who's better.
That's true. But I mean, after the big talk was after Beijing's monumental dick waving 4 years ago.
With the 12-year-olds as a gymnastics team.
Oh yeah, and they're
they smoked everyone.
Their ridiculous opening ceremony. It's gonna be a little hard to top a dick waving of that proportion. My verdict on whether Vancouver has managed to, you know, top that. Well, they can't top that. But frankly, they don't give a shit about trying to top that.
Mm-hmm.
So top that.
Our indifference, Daniel.
What they did do was a brilliant, spectacle, visual, theatrical, musical spectacle, what did they call it? The Landscape of a Dream was the cultural section of the opening ceremonies, and that was the coolest part. But before I get to that, we can't just start right at the best part. We got to talk about the opening of the opening.
Yeah, we got to wade through the shit before we can get to the Ferrero Rocher truffle.
Right. Do you have any of those on you?
No.
Okay, because that would be sweet. That would make
this
a lot better, because those things are the bomb diggity. So they started out with the welcome of the First Nations. The First Nations being the Aboriginal Native peoples of Canada. Who I feel sorry for, because, you know, we talk about the Native Americans a lot. No one really talks about the Native Canadians. At least not in America.
Well, why would we give a shit?
Exactly. The question is, why would I give a shit about watching them on television? So they had all the First Nations, the Plains, the Inuits, the various tribes, the peoples of the forest.
Oh, we have the Squamish.
Let's see, yeah. Oh, we can actually read it.
Yeah.
The Squamish Nation, the Musqueam,
Lidwat and
Tsleil-Waututh. Thank you. You are apparently better at that than I am. So they had all these, you know, native representatives of native Canadian tribes come out and do their fancy native dances, which was cool, except for the fact that they had them come out before the athletes, which they did intentionally, because they were like, well, every year before this, we've always had the athletes come out first, and then we do, we always do the cultural
elements after the athletes have come on the field, so they can get a glimpse of it. But this year, they're like, ah, fuck that.
Well, no, this is the opposite. They always did the cultural thing first, and then had the athletes come in. But this year, like, well, the athletes shouldn't have to just stand out in the parking lot and miss the Landscape of a Dream, so we should have them come in first. Problem is, they had the First Nations come out before the athletes, which they should have had the athletes just come in very first thing, then come the First Nations, then comes the Landscape of a Dream. So unfortunately for these poor Native Canadian dancers, they had to stand out there dancing in place for over an hour.
Because there are 82 nations who got to lumber into the stadium.
That's true. We've got, you know...
So, of course, you got the guys in their native headdresses dancing around like, what the fuck are we doing here, guys?
Yeah, and I should... Actually, the commentators, and I should comment on the commentators. Matt Lauer and Bob Costas. Worst commentating team I've heard in a while. I mean, the two just had no chemistry whatsoever.
Well, because, obviously, I mean, let's see, Bob Costas, if he's not commenting on a Ken Burns documentary, he's basically useless.
Yeah, and Matt Lauer, he's likable, but he's
without Katie Couric, he is nothing.
Right, so
there, or Al Roker.
There's a point where Bob Costas asks Matt Lauer at what temperature water freezes, and Matt Lauer's just like, yeah, I don't know. But my favorite part was,
let's ask Al Roker, who wants this dog?
Here's what's happening in your neck of the woods. So there's one part where, I don't remember what the question was, but Bob Costas asked Matt Lauer something, and Matt Lauer doesn't answer him, and he's just like, I guess that was a rhetorical question, as there is no answer forthcoming. And it's just like,
it's not a rhetorical question. If he doesn't know the answer, he just doesn't know the answer. That's just a normal question.
Well, he just didn't respond to him. He just didn't answer, and there's just like 30 seconds of just silence, and then Bob, I guess that was a rhetorical question. So they were less than fantastic,
obviously,
as a commentating team. So, you know, we had the First Nations dancers being left out in the cold.
You know,
literally.
You know who they should have had commentating that?
Who?
Al Michaels and John Madden. Well, because Al,
that would have been interesting.
Well, think about it, because Al Michaels is famous for his 1980s Lake Placid, you know, do you believe in miracles? Yes! Right? And then obviously John Madden, because he's just...
Because he's John Madden.
Because he's hilarious. It's like, hey, look at those, pretty Indian headdresses! Look at them dance around! Wow!
Boom!
It's like, here you got the one guy going up the field here, and he's going to turn around and dance, he's going to catch this one guy, boom!
Well, I will agree, yes, that would have made the opening ceremonies, at least that first part, much more entertaining.
Yeah.
And then the final negative thing, before I move on to the positive aspects about the opening ceremony, because I did enjoy it overall, there were some really cool things about it. And of course, this is probably news to no one, I'm sure there were millions of people watching the ceremonies last night, so everything I'm saying, I'm sure everyone already noticed, but...
Or didn't care about.
Or either didn't care. If you're listening to this and you didn't watch the Olympics, then you probably don't care in the first place.
And you're not really missing much.
So, at the very end, when they add the actual lighting of the Olympic cauldron, the passing of the flame to its final destination, even though technically it's not the final destination, because apparently there's some rule by the IOC, the International Olympic Committee, that the Olympic flame, in whatever venue is hosting it, has to be visible to the entire city. Everyone, no matter where in the city you are, you have to be able to see the Olympic flame. So obviously the one inside the stadium would not be visible. Mm-hmm. So they had some sort of secret secondary Olympic flame cauldron, which the final torch bearer, which people were speculating and were, of course, correct about the fact that it was Wayne Gretzky.
Well, come on, because Wayne Gretzky in Canada is second only to Jesus.
He is the Great One. That's his official title.
Well, yeah.
So the Wayne Gretzky was the final torchbearer. Before him was Nancy Green, skier. Before her was Steve Nash, the lovable basketball player. Before him, Catriona Lemay-Doan, speed skater. And before her, Rick Hansen, paraplegic athlete, all had their torches. And in fact, all four of them were going to light the Olympic cauldron.
Uh-huh.
So they had the cauldron come out of the ground, and then they had these four arms that were going to come up and all link together next to the cauldron.
Uh-huh.
And then all four of them would light it at once. Unfortunately, the fourth arm, the one in front of Catriona, did not come out of the ground. Some sort of malfunction in the hydraulic system prevented it from doing so.
Oh, okay, so she's just standing there with her torch held up in the air. It's like, how much longer am I going to hold this?
Yeah, very awkwardly. And, like, there's, and it's a good 5 minutes, of course, before anyone realizes that there's a problem. And, of course, Bob Costas is just like, seems to be some sort of technical difficulty preventing things from proceeding. Thank you, Bob. I think we got that when, you know, the camera zooms in on Steve Nash's face and he's doing that kind of like, awkward, like, really wide, sheepish grin kind of thing.
See there, because Steve Nash has got the look on his face like something funny's going down, but the rest of us don't get the joke. And you see her with a little smile here, and the darting eyes there, and the fact that there's no freaking torch coming out near her.
And then Wayne Gretzky's just got this really bored, impatient look on his face, because obviously he's got, you know, better places to be, like...
Gretzky can't be bothered.
Like Asgard.
Yeah.
Where he must dine in the throne of, in the Hall of Champions.
Well, think about it. He owns his own restaurant not too far from...
That's though. True. He's like, I want to go get a bite to eat at Gretzky's.
Yeah. We've been to... Gretzky's is a nice place.
Gretzky's on every corner.
One of the nicest places I've been to in Canada was at Gretzky's.
That's true. That was actually my first experience drinking in a bar.
That's true.
And it was a good one.
Yeah, I
They were very
it.
Nice.
Yeah.
It was very clean, very friendly, and tons of Gretzky memorabilia plastered all over the walls.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, those... It was kind of sad because, you know, after this magnificent spectacle, which I'm about to describe to you, had taken place, technical difficulties render it kind of anticlimactic.
Mm.
And you know someone lost their job for that.
Yes.
Big time.
Yeah, someone getting fired for this.
Heads are going to roll, or perhaps be curled.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's their sport, isn't it?
That's true. Huh. I imagine the barbarian tribes of Canada they curl with human skulls.
Makes sense.
That's just my amateur anthropological speculation about it.
I think it's a good one. All right, well, so you told us what was negative about the ceremony. Why don't you give us the positives of the ceremony?
Well, the positives, let's see. The landscape of a dream, I'll start with that, was just... incredible. It was this multi-stage amalgam of dance, singing, music, theater, visual art. Let's see. There were visual effects. It was just, and of course, Donald Sutherland was narrating it, which just makes it all the better.
Mm-hmm.
Also, Donald Sutherland was one of the eight notable Canadians chosen to carry in the Olympic flag.
Sutherland's a Canadian?
Apparently.
Huh. I never would have figured.
Yeah, I think I knew that. I knew Kiefer Sutherland was Canadian, I guess by default, then his
Donald
father
Sutherland
would
have to be Canadian.
Donald Sutherland would be Canadian. So, I gotta say, Donald Sutherland was looking damn sharp. He had this white, like, really bright white suit, all-white suit, white tie, and he had his, you know, his hair is really white, and it's, like, combed back, and his beard's nice. Donald Sutherland was looking nice. Donald
like the architect?
Yeah, exactly. He did look like the architect. How much better would that movie have been if Donald Sutherland had been the architect instead
Way
of
better.
Some Colonel Sanders reject?
Way better.
Because
he's much more sinister.
That's true. Donald Sutherland's the man. I love Donald Sutherland.
You don't fuck with Donald Sutherland.
No, you don't. Especially when he's dressed all in white.
Indeed.
Like Gandalf. He's Gandalf come back from, you know, from hell or whatever. Or his trip beyond the stars.
I am the serpent of Skritfar, wielder of the flame of Arnor. Dark fire will never fail you, flame of Udun!
So, anyways, what I was trying to say was that the landscape of a dream part was pretty awesome. As Lena put it, the Olympic opening ceremonies are kind of like the Olympics of live performance. And, you know, they put on a hell of a show.
Did you
also,
say that?
Yeah.
Okay.
If you want to speak for yourself,
by all means, step in.
The mic's open. The mic's hot.
I personally believe that the Olympics are the Olympic equivalent to live performance because they put on one of the most spectacular live shows in the world every couple of years.
Well spoken. So yeah, I mean, there was the best part for me definitely was the fiddle playing tap dancer. Who's just this crazy dude, with beard and wild hair, and they all had amazing, like, leather outfits, and there's, like...
Are you just messing with me now?
A bunch of people tap dancing around a mountain, and he was up on the mountain tap dancing, and,
And there's flares coming out of the tap shoes.
Oh, yeah, their tap shoes had sparklers on them. What? And there were the other people who weren't tap dancing were twirling flaming batons.
And the bacon.
Yeah, and bacon's pretty awesome, too. You know what? That opening performance was almost as awesome as bacon.
I don't think you can get better than bacon, Justin. I think you misjudged the awesomeness of bacon.
No, maybe not. But what was your favorite part, Lena?
I really loved the tap dancing fiddlers, but I also really enjoyed. I mean, overall, just like the use of the LCD screens, and the projections, and it really shows how using projections in live performance is kind of a newer art, but it really created the entire environment. So I liked when they did the Northern Lights.
Okay, there you go. I was going to say,
I like when I saw Justin Bieber singing We Are the World.
Yeah, I was going to maybe not comment on that, but who is this Justin Bieber? You seem to be the target audience for Justin Bieber. Who is this guy?
He is a 15-year-old. He looks like he's 10, but he's really 15. And this is one of his songs. Baby, 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 no, I said baby, 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 no, I said baby, 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 no, I thought you'd always be mine, mine. And he's just a really cool boy, and he likes to sing. He's a very good singer.
Well, that was pretty great. Maybe they should have had you doing the opening lines for We Are the World.
Can we have Eva singing popular music? Because she's really good at that.
Should that be a new segment?
Yeah.
I think we can do that.
Eva sings the hits.
Yeah.
All right, got it.
Well, yeah.
Well,
Let's make our own TV show.
All right. Well, I think that wraps up our Olympic discussion.
Our Olympic recap, yeah.
I'm glad you gave me like a $20 answer to a $2 question. I asked you what was your favorite part. I don't even think I can repeat everything you just said, but it sounded very well informed.
All I got out of this entire conversation about the Olympics is bacon is awesome.
And Donald Sutherland.
So thank you for that.
And Donald Sutherland is Gandalf.
That too.
Now let's listen the whole thing over again. I'm gonna listen to it.
And now we're gonna move on to our final segment, Spectacles of Human Failure.
Yes.
There are white folks, and then there are ignorant motherfuckers like you.
All right, so we're re-recording this because the spectacle of human failure that we just did, Audacity crashed as it is so often prone to do.
Basically, so Audacity's got a special place in our spectacles of human failure.
Audacity is always at the top of the list for spectacles of human failure, but our spectacle of human failure for this week is whoever is giving Steven Seagal movie roles because
or money.
Or money, or a TV show, or apparently a film music career, too, because he's done two albums.
Ugh.
But apparently Steven Seagal has had a secret film career, not secret in the sense that he doesn't want people to know about it, secret in the sense that no one cares. So he's actually done 19 movies since 2003. All of which sound exactly the same. There were 19. We did run down the entire list, and it was awesome. But we're not gonna. I can't read that whole list again.
To be perfectly honest, I mean, most of the plot points are interchangeable. Either he's fighting terrorists, or he's been turned into a terrorist.
There's a pretty straightforward formula. Take a ridiculous name, take a weird career, turn that into a second career, and then pick some type of enemy for him to fight.
Pretty much.
So, for example, in A Dangerous Man, tagline, they started it, he'll finish it.
Steven Seagal is Shane Daniels, a special forces agent turned falsely imprisoned convict who takes on Chinese mobsters.
Yeah. So, that's the most recent one he's done. So, we're going to pick our favorites out of this instead of trying to run down the whole list. But if you want to read the entire list, go to...
We'll put the link up on the website for you.
We'll put the link up for you. It's on Movie Phone. It's proof that Steven Seagal has, in fact, been making movies for the last decade.
It's just all of them have been straight to DVD after this, releases.
After this, our favorites from those. Exhibit C, Driven to Kill, tagline... They took his daughter, so he's taking them down.
In this movie, Steven Seagal is an ex-Russian mobster turned crime novelist who takes on Russian mobsters.
Exhibit D has the award for the most ridiculous premise, Against the Dark, tagline, he lives by the sword, they will die by it.
Now in this one, he's Tao, a katana master turned apocalypse survivor who takes on vampire zombies. Now this just, why vampire zombies? Why not just have one?
I guess when you can't make a choice, don't.
Just, that just sounds like a tagline from one of his movies.
That actually sounds like a, when you when you can't make a choice, don't. If you think you can run from Steven Seagal, don't.
All right, you exhibit think you F, stop listening to this radio show, don't.
Exhibit F wins my pistol for worst wins my award for worst title.
So bad, it's just we can't
it's
even.
It's causing me to fail at English. Exhibit F, pistol whipped. They came to collect a debt he paid in full.
Now, before I read the plot synopsis, this is no joke. This is an actual movie. It's called Pistol Whipped. Really?
And who is Steven Seagal in this one?
Steven Seagal is Matt Connor, a former elite cop turned degenerate gambler slash alcoholic who takes on Connecticut gangsters. What's a Connecticut gangster?
You know, like that novel, A Connecticut Gangster in King Arthur's Court.
What?
Moving on.
Wait, dude, what?
Runner-up for worst title, Exhibit I, Attack Force. Humanity's greatest hope faces his greatest battle.
Okay, and Steven Seagal in this one is generic name, the leader of a fallen strike team who takes on his own military.
Alright,
I'm not gonna keep talking about these stupid names, they're crap.
Okay, Black Dawn. It's always darkest before dawn.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Steven Seagal is Jonathan Cold, an undercover CIA agent who takes on arms dealers and the kidnappers of his former student.
Interestingly enough, this is actually Steven Seagal's second role as Jonathan Cold. In fact, the first movie of the decade, Exhibit S, The Foreigner, he was actually Jonathan Cold, a deep cover operative who takes on pretty much everyone.
What's the tagline, Justin?
If they think they can stop him, they're dead wrong. Oh, that's the one that actually sounds like a... Yeah.
Yeah.
The one we just said before.
Yeah.
Then we've got...
You missed it. It's down there.
Right, right.
A little more. No,
today
no,
you
more. Die.
No, we gotta do that one.
We gotta do that one?
Today
oh,
you
yeah,
die.
Oh, yeah.
Because it looks like it has...
Charles Barkley? Yeah.
Tagline, whoever set him up is definitely going down.
And in this movie, he's Harlan Banks, a casino thief with psychic abilities, who takes on the crooks who double-cross him. Now, honestly, if you were a psychic, couldn't you see that coming? Possibly, you know, avoid the double-cross, maybe?
Point out your plot holes elsewhere. All right, this one. Exhibit P.
God, this is the worst one.
Out of reach. It's a split second between hit and miss.
And this one, he's Billy Ray Lansing, an ex-intelligence agent turned nature survivalist who takes on the sex traffickers who kidnapped his Polish pen pal.
The Polish pen pal is what makes it for me.
I thought I knew what ridiculous was until this day.
Finally, Exhibit R, out for a kill. Tagline, out for revenge, out for payback.
Out of ideas. In this one, Steven Seagal is Robert Burns, you know, the poet. Archaeologist turned falsely imprisoned Chinese convict who takes on Chinese mobsters and writes poetry about snow.
Alright, well, that's as much absurdity as I think we can handle for one episode. Like I said, if you want to read the full list, and believe me, it's worth it, go to that article and we'll have the link to it posted. Until next time, I'm Justin Eisenstadt.
And I'm Colin Kakamas.
And we are boldly going nowhere. Maybe I don't really want to know how you got in gross. 'Cause I just want to fly. Lately, did you ever feel the pain? The morning rain has soaked you to the bone. Maybe I just wanna fly, wanna live but don't wanna die. Maybe I just wanna breathe. Maybe I just don't believe. Maybe you're the same as me. Boldly Going Nowhere is a Los Tres Monos production.
And now, a precocious 7-year-old.
Listen to Boldly Going Nowhere because it's the Mad Nuts.